Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For months, they've wrangled over the budget for a fiscal year that is now already well underway. Yesterday, a White House meeting of Republicans and Democrats failed to seal a deal. Now, a federal government shutdown could be imminent. This hour, On Point, we'll look at the numbers and politics of the budget showdown in Washington. Boy, it was some kind of day yesterday. Promises to be the same again today and maybe on into tomorrow. President Obama met with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and House Speaker John Boehner. No agreement. The president yesterday still held out some hope.
We are now closer than we have ever been to getting an agreement. There's no reason why we should not get an agreement. As I said before, we have now matched the number that the Speaker originally sought. The only question is whether politics or ideology are going to get in the way of preventing a government shutdown.
Have matched what the Speaker originally sought. But never mind that. The Speaker, he says, he's looking for all he can get. Here's John Boehner, also after that meeting with the President yesterday.
We've made clear that we're fighting for the largest spending cuts possible. We're talking about real spending cuts here, no smoke and mirrors. We've also made clear that there was never an agreement at $33 billion, we're going to continue to fight for, again, the largest cuts possible.
The latest number we're hearing, $40 billion cut in the remainder of this fiscal year. On NBC's Today Show this morning, Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, said Republicans keep moving the goalposts.
We've met the other side more than halfway, $33 billion, but they keep moving the goalpost back, and that's because Speaker Boehner is pulled by the Tea Party.
But we've got even bigger planning afoot here. House Budget Committee Chairman Republican Paul Ryan rolling out a vision for next year and beyond. He said, look, these are bigger problems than predictable politics.
This is the most predictable economic crisis in our history. And what are we doing playing politics? We don't need clever politicians. We need leaders. We need leadership.
Everything on the table right now in Washington. Joining me from the Capitol first today, Gail Shattuck, senior congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, great to have you back with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Washington is Major Garrett, congressional correspondent for the National Journal. Major, welcome back to you as well.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
So, Gail, there's so much to get into here, but at this point, does it look to you as though a shutdown is imminent or still avoidable?
You know, I think it is still avoidable. Sometimes when you have the sabers rattling the loudest, it is just hardball negotiations toward a deal. But I'll tell you, I would have to agree that the gap appears to be widening. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be able to close it, though.
Major Garrett, maybe there's still time for a deal in the heat of negotiation here. But if John Boehner's gone from a $33 billion kind of ask to a $40 billion ask, does it look to you as though Democrats are willing to go there with him?
They might be. And I think it's important that Speaker Boehner, who until yesterday never actually gave a number other than the $61 billion number originally passed by the House Republicans, by giving a number $40 billion yesterday and putting his name and the House Republicans' name behind it, that gave the White House and Senate Democrats, for the very first time, a House Republican-endorsed number smaller than the original $61 billion. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for any tea leaf that would be, I think, fairly portrayed as optimistic, that was the only one you could see yesterday. I agree with Gail. There was a lot of hardball rhetoric yesterday, but in the main, when Speaker Boehner came up with a number smaller than the one that they've been holding to steadfastly for weeks, I think that created an opening. And the House and Senate appropriations staff worked very, very late into the night. No one that I'm aware of at the White House or in the Senate Democratic leadership has rejected that $40 billion number. And what that may indicate as well is that Republicans have agreed to give up on many of the policy riders that they were hoping to inject into this debate and possibly succeed with. And they've always communicated to Senate Democrats, if the riders go, the spending cuts have to go up. They're on sort of a teeter-totter within the House Republican Conference. If you take away the policy writers, you must elevate the amount of spending cuts. With Boehner putting his voice around $40 billion, we may be closer to a deal than it might outwardly appear.
Now, that's interesting. And remind us of those policy writers. The main ones that have been most prominent have been cutting funding for Planned Parenthood, cutting funding for NPR, where we are right now. What else is on that list, Major?
Well, that's good. Those two are important to the Republicans. They're also very big sort of mega ones that House Republicans knew that they weren't going to get but put there anyway. Defunding all of the president's health care law passed last year. Defunding the various bureaucratic arrangements that have to be constructed to properly supervise and put in place all the Wall Street reforms also passed last year. And then a significant number of writers dealing specifically with the Environmental Protection Agency, the most important one as far as policy is concerned, and certainly one that's a high priority for House Republicans, is disallowing or preventing the Environmental Protection Agency from regulating greenhouse carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas under the Clean Air Act.
So I want to be sure I understand, Major. You're saying that those are also riders that the Republicans might be willing to trade away for another $7 billion in overall cuts?
Well, they know that that's a fight they're probably unlikely to win. All those riders we've just discussed are clearly things Senate Democrats will not go for, although there is some sentiment within the Senate Democratic Caucus on the issue of the EPA. That will be dealt with in another piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. But all the rest are just simply veto bait for the president, and the Republicans are not in a position to override a veto or get anything done in the Senate. So they've put the riders in there, but if they take them out and say, well, that's a concession. Well, Democrats would say, well, it's not really a concession. You know you're not going to get them anyway. But Republicans say, no, it's a concession, so give us more on the spending cuts. So things may be working out in that respect.
Well, this is really interesting. We're going to look at the substance. Gil, help us look at the politics behind this. President Obama already taking heat from some Democratic quarters for having stepped up to that $33 billion cut. Do you think if the Republicans offer to sort of scoot all these riders off the table, and that's a lot, healthcare funding, Wall Street regulation, the EPA power and all the rest, could the president agree to a further $7 billion in cut to say, okay, all done, here we go?
Well, I think it's easier for him to do it than it is for Speaker Boehner at this point, as the Speaker has been emphasizing on every possible occasion. He has behind him, 87 freshmen and a significant number of conservatives who are very committed to the $61 billion number and all the riders and more. Remember, there were votes in the House about increasing the level of cuts to 2006 levels that got significant number of votes. So I think if you had to judge, who has the biggest hammer back of him smashed down on his hand if he goes too far, it's clearly Speaker.
Major Garrett, do you think John Boehner actually has the freedom there to walk away from the $61 billion number and the riders and all the rest? Can he bring the Tea Party freshman and more than the Tea Party freshman with him if he does that? Or does he need to? Could he get enough Democrats that it wouldn't be necessary?
On this vote, the Speaker wants to have his Republicans with him. He does not want to have a repeat of the vote that we saw 2 weeks ago when the last temporary spending bill was passed and 54 House Republicans bolted and the Speaker needed the support of House Democrats. That's why I said when the Speaker said yesterday $40 billion, that's why I thought that was a very significant event, because that's the Speaker saying something he hadn't said before. And I know John Boehner. I've covered him since 1990.
Yep.
I have a very, I think, keen insight into the way he runs things as Speaker, and that is he doesn't say things out loud that he hasn't cleared. And he doesn't make a move publicly that he doesn't feel extremely confident in, not only as a negotiator with the opposition party, but as a negotiator within his own Republican conference. And there's no way that he would have said $40 billion yesterday if he didn't think that was something that he could hold, sell, and move his Republican conference in support of to end this particular impasse.
So maybe there's a way forward right there.
Then if Senate Democrats are willing to go along, and if the White House can find a way to go to $40 billion, it would be a significant amount.
No kidding.
Cutting.
It was already at $33 billion, the biggest cut ever in a single year. Gail, if the president says no, we can't do that, we're on the shutdown path, if they can't find an agreement, who wins, who loses in a shutdown scenario, Gail?
I think Republicans still think that they would lose. That's what I'm hearing that Boehner has told the caucus earlier in the week. But they do feel, the freshmen are convinced, many of them, that they have an advantage in this shutdown that they didn't have when Newt Gingrich faced off with President Clinton, and that's Fox News. They feel that they have
bigger megaphone?
A way to make their case, you know, beyond their own ranks that is going to be supportive to them. It's going to be interesting to see if that turns out to be the case. The other thing I would add to the discussion is, you know, it's not just the number that counts for these freshmen or even for the speaker. It's where the cuts are. They don't want to see, Senator Schumer has been suggesting, moving into some kind of mandatory area. They don't want kind of accounting gimmicks. They want significant cuts that are going to show up in the bottom line in subsequent budgets. The freshmen are thinking not just about their last election. They're thinking about primary challengers in 2012 that are already raising their hands in the air if they are not Tea Party enough.
Well, you two are great. This is very illuminating already. Washington and the fiscal future of the year, of the long-term future, up on the high wire here. Gail Shattuck with the Christian Science Monitor in Washington and Major Garrett there with the National Journal. It's great to have you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're going to hear in just a moment from Democrat Marcy Kaptur. We'll hear later in this hour from a Republican congressman. Yesterday, Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Virginia, said Republicans want to avoid a showdown. He insisted any measure should be taken to keep the government open, including major spending cuts that the president was so far unwilling to make.
The White House now has increased the likelihood of a shutdown in just dismissing out of hand a vehicle that we have put forward to say, look, we don't want a shutdown.
And here was freshman Congressman Joe Walsh, Republican, Tea Party member, talking last night with NPR's All Things Considered, blaming Democrats for the impasse.
And basically my mantra has been for the last 40-some days, give us a response. I think the president should be ashamed of himself. I think he's been AWOL in this entire debate. He's finally somewhat engaged now. But look, the Democrats are in denial. I think they want to shut this government down because their only hope is to paint the Republicans as the bad guys.
Well, I don't know. Let's hear from a Democrat. Marcy Kaptur joins us, Democratic congresswoman representing Ohio's 9th District. That includes Toledo. She's on both the House Appropriations Committee and the Budget Committee. She's the most senior woman in the House, U.S. House of Representatives. Marcy Kaptur, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to be with you. What do you see coming here, Congressman Kaptur?
Well, I hope what we'll see coming is responsible governance because the country doesn't want any more partisan shenanigans. Did you listen to the words of the people that you interviewed, what they were using? Very partisan, very acid. I think that the country at this point of the recession can't afford stalemate up here and partisan games. They want us to run this country and to help this economy grow and produce jobs so people can go back to work. The way you balance a budget is to get everybody working. And with this overhang of 9% in average unemployment in the country, and in districts like mine, way over that, you're not going to be able to balance budgets, and you certainly can't do it when you don't have everything on the table. So I think the finger-pointing ought to stop. That's very adolescent behavior. We need to be grown-ups here. The country expects us to be responsible. That's what we are elected to do.
The president seems to be gambling that sort of let's be grown-ups message, that let's go for the middle ground, I'll be reasonable here, is the winning path. I mean, that's his line so far, Marcy. But Republicans, do you think they're actually willing this time to gamble on a shutdown, that it might not hurt them in the end with voters?
Oh, I think they don't understand what that means in terms of the markets, in terms of the disruption that it causes. This particular proposal, the set of proposals that they have on the table, cost us jobs. NASA, for example, in Cleveland, Ohio, and in part of the region that I represent, they called me yesterday. They're laying off dozens of people. The lack of action by the Congress on this budget for 2010, for 2011, much less 2012, is actually causing layoffs across the country. So what they're doing is adding to the unemployment problem, but I don't think they understand that.
What about the $33 billion that it appears the president's already been willing to see cut from this year's budget? Would you be on board with that? And what if Speaker Boehner is now talking about $40 billion? If all the riders that have been included here were swept off the table, would you be willing to support $40 billion or even $33 in cuts?
I'm willing to support a package that is balanced. So, for example, when General Electric, which hasn't really created any jobs in this country, doesn't pay any taxes, and they're making historic profits, or ExxonMobil last year made the largest profits of any oil company in world history and don't pay any taxes in America, and Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs that took America down this terrible chute, just took $25 million more dollars from his stock options, and they don't pay at the same tax rate as normal Americans. In fact, those Wall Street banks only pay at an 11% rate versus 35% for most honest businesses in this country. When that's off the table, I'm very reluctant to agree to a partial package. Everything has to be on the table. Tax breaks, defense spending, discretionary spending, the programs that are security-based programs, and also our pension and benefit programs. Sure, you can put it on the table, but it all has to be there. And what they're trying to do is balance a budget on the 12% of the budget that is most sensitive, that hits ordinary people, senior citizens who can't afford heating for their homes, people who are lined up in food lines, returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan lined up in my district at local food banks, over 600 of them a month. I'm unwilling to make them hurt more. They've paid their price. Wall Street hasn't. GE hasn't. Exxon hasn't. So for me, it's an issue of fairness and what's on the table and what isn't.
You say it should all be on the table. Many people might agree, but a lot of that does not appear to be on the table now. And we've got a day and a half here.
The majority is not on the table, and that's why you see a reluctance to move forward by many members who say, hey, this is just going to make it worse on the people who are hurting so much already. The middle class has been gouged. Why do we want to hurt them more when 1% of the country now holds 25% of the wealth?
Does that mean to you it would be a mistake? Would it be a mistake then if the president agrees to a $33 billion or a $40 billion cut?
Well, first of all, that's not enough. That's not enough to balance, you know, to close the gap. And I could be convinced to do that if I thought there was something else coming, but if all they're going to do is just gouge the middle class and the working class, no thanks. That's not a deal for me because it's not fair. And it doesn't go after Wall Street bonuses. It doesn't go after foreign tax havens in the Cayman Islands that Goldman Sachs tucked all those billions, hundreds of billions of dollars away. Why should I say to the people of my region, hey, you're out of work, tough luck, you're going to lose your house, you're going to lose your food coupons, you know, your kids can't go to college, that you've got to give more. I can't do that. It's not just, and it doesn't get us to a full employment economy.
Marcy Kaptur from Ohio's 9th District there sits on the House Appropriations Committee and the Budget Committee. Democrat Marcy Kaptur, thank you very much for being with us, Congresswoman.
Thank you kindly.
Mitch Garrett, if that's a big voice, one big voice behind President Obama, how much leeway does he have here?
Well, I mean, Marcy Kaptur is from the left part of the House of Representatives in the Democratic caucus. Mm-hmm. She's a powerful, passionate voice. She's not the center of gravity, though, in all this. And if John Boehner does need Democratic support for any kind of compromise, he's not going to get it from Marcy Kaptur under any circumstance. So she represents a point of view on this, and there are many Democrats who agree with her who would like to see the issue of tax income repatriation on the table, but that's not there. It's not on the table. Unless you get a big deal, which the president hasn't said he's open to, and other senators and House members are working on sort of the outside edges of all this, on a big comprehensive sort of master plan or grand bargain, until we get to those conversations, Marcy Kaptur's objections to this deal, while relevant, aren't operative because that's not what's on the table.
Gil Chadwick, President Obama might not bring Marcy Kaptur with him if in striking a deal here. Does he have enough support to go to $33, go to $40 billion in negotiation with Republicans and you know, end up with his party still behind him?
I think it depends on what the cuts are. There are ways, the General Accountability Office a couple weeks ago came out with a report that said that there is $100 billion in duplicative federal programs. Well, if you cut 30 billion duplicative programs, it's different than cutting into what Democrats see as the fiber, the sinew, the bone of important environmental programs, important social safety net programs. So I think his flexibility with Democrats is what's inside the cuts as much as the cuts themselves. But I'll tell you, Marcy said one thing that I thought was fascinating, and it's what interests me the most about this whole debate. She said, I could be convinced of this if I thought that there was more coming. She said more on Wall Street bonuses, more on jobs. And that, I think, is the key to this whole thing. You know, when the Republicans announced their budget, a very dramatic budget yesterday.
Paul Ryan's draft.
Paul Ryan's budget. And then, you know, moving forward to the debt, raising the debt ceiling, they have to convey a sense of dramatic change, not just with this particular item, but the freshmen that are talking to me, some of them say, well, look, you know, we've got to move beyond this. We have a much more important issue coming. Why shut down the government over a few billion when we're about to face decisions over trillions? Shut down the government over that. Other freshmen say just the opposite. They say, yes, we have trillions coming, but, you know, if we give in on this easy thing, how are we going to make gains on the bigger thing? So I think the question she raised is exactly right. It's all of these decisions are in the context of much bigger ones coming, but how individuals reason through that, it really varies. Some of the freshmen are sticking to, let's fight it out on this small one first.
Of course, Paul Ryan's pointing to a bigger horizon. Let me ask, if I may, Gail, Major, do you see on the Republican side, behind the curtain, a willingness to put more on the table here? Paul Ryan looking at 2012 and on out, almost $6 trillion in cuts he's promoting. And the headlines coming out of that are lower tax rates on corporations and high earners, big cutbacks. Do you see a willingness to get more on the table here, or is this just, you know, lock and load, this is it, we're going to go with this or go down with this on the GOP / Tea Party side, Major?
The Republicans in the House are willing to put everything on the table except additional revenue. If you look at Paul Ryan's revenue side of his budget resolution, it calls for changes to the tax code that are revenue neutral. That is to say, that don't increase the aggregate amount of taxes raised by the federal government. That's a deal breaker for most Democrats, because Democrats are simply not philosophically prepared or politically willing to say to Republicans, we will entertain significant reforms to entitlements, Medicaid, Medicare, possibly Social Security, without you giving up your holy grail, which is tax revenue. If our holy grail on the Democratic side, speaking for them, are our entitlement programs, and we're prepared to move, then you've got to be prepared to move off of your adamant refusal to increase federal tax revenue. And House Republicans simply are not. Now, there is a small faction of Senate Republicans, Tom Coburn, who used to be in that House Republican adamant no tax increase camp. He's no longer there now. He's working in a bipartisan group called the Gang of Six that is willing to look at higher revenue within the context of all these things, tax reform, entitlement reform, a big grand bargain. And he has come to the belief, and it's taken him quite a while to get there, starting in a very hard, reinforced position of adamantine opposition to higher taxes at the federal level, to raising them if he gets all these other things. So you can evolve, you can change on these things, but right now, House Republicans are where Tom Coburn used to be, and as long as they're there, it's very tough to see this happen.
And the big push is on right now. Major Garrett, Gail, stand by. Lots of callers here. Let me go to East Moline, Illinois, and Lynn. Lynn, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What do you see?
Hello. I am very much for doing everything to avoid a government shutdown. I'm a retired employee of the Department of the Army and worked in contracting for logistics. And all we hear about is how it's going to affect the taxpayers, you know, the post office, the offices that they interface with, and that's fine. But there's so much going on that I don't think even the congressmen, senators, maybe not even the president know about that. It goes on behind the scenes. And supporting these wars. And
you're saying it's awkward, it's destructive. What when the government shuts down?
What potentially happened with the shutdown I was in was the contracts. Contracts are schedule driven, and we moved heaven and earth to get those schedules on the contract and stick to them. If a government shuts down, it's on any given day that it affects a schedule. If it's a delivery of government-furnished information,
yep.
GFI, for instance,
mm-hmm.
And we can't do it because of this, that gives it open the whole scenario where the contractor then has recourse to mess up the contract.
Right. So it's awkward. It's expensive, Lynn, and you've got experience with that in the Army, Department of the Army there. Appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Sacramento, California. Larry, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. There are a few things that no one's putting on the table, like the $2.3 trillion of undocumentable adjustments that the military had back in 2005, and the $1 trillion worth of interest we're paying to the bankers at the Federal Reserve.
So what does that say to you? I mean, they've still got to deal with a budget that's on the table right now to fund the government for the rest of the year. You want more brought into the conversation.
It's. I don't know why they're talking about cutting the middle class down and giving a tax break to the wealthy. They want to drop it from 27 to 25%.
Yep.
And they're not talking about the corn and soy subsidies to farmers, so that for them not to grow food when we're having a shortage.
Yeah, Larry, we've got it. More like 30 plus down to 25%. One more before the break here. Conway, South Carolina. Larry, thanks for your call. Chip, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you see, Chip?
Well, I think that if one of the things that needs to happen is when they say everything's on the table, in fact, everything needs to be on the table. A previous caller talked about revenues, and that certainly is something that needs to be discussed. Everything that I read indicates to me that we won't solve this deficit problem if we don't look at the revenue side as well. And it really makes no difference who created the problem. Reality tells us we've got to deal with it. So it's not just a matter of cuts. It's a matter of revenue as well, and we have to put defense on the table as well. I think that what's happening is that there's a narrow focus stemming from the Tea Party outlook that it simply says this is what we want, and this is what we've got to have to be reelected. And if that doesn't happen, we're not going to compromise. Well, if there's no compromise, there won't be anything done in government at all.
Chip, I appreciate your call. Our time is short before the break. Gail Shattuck, those things, revenue taxes, defense spending, really aren't so much on the table here. Does that mean Democrats have been fundamentally outmaneuvered in this? And we've just got 20 seconds here, Gail.
I think there is a problem for Democrats in that their president is in the White House. I think you'd see a lot more talk about defense cuts if it were a Republican. Most of the president's support on defense these days is coming from Republicans, so it's a very unusual situation that I think you only see when you have split government.
Lots of feedback online here. Christine says on Facebook, I can't believe what they're going through for 6 months of spending. I can't imagine what the 2012 budget process will entail. Oh, my goodness. Hold on to your hats. No kidding. I want to get a call here from Omaha, Nebraska. Bernie. Bernie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. Say, I believe that both parties are showing a power play to see who can get the most votes in 2012. In the bottom line, in the big picture to this shutdown is, who is protecting the majority of the citizens of the U.S.? And which party is that? And that's what it really boils down to. And each party will stand their ground if it comes to shutting down the government. And shutting down the government can really give the big picture as to which party is going to support the majority of the people in this country.
But, of course, Bernie, as you well know, both parties say that's what they're doing. Democrats say you don't raise revenues, you cut all kinds of things that are going to hurt the country. You're hurting the majority. Republicans say, Paul Ryan saying yesterday, we've got everything on the line for this country. We've got to cut to save the nation. Who do you buy? Whose line do you buy, Bernie?
If one party really wanted to hold back spending, they should have looked at it starting 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, it's kind of like the Jacksonian era. What Andrew Jackson did by the end of his second term impacted the country for 20 years. So I look back on what happened in the past. Most politicians always say, okay, let's put this behind us and go forward. Nobody wants to analyze all the screw-ups of the past.
Bernie, I appreciate your call. Gail, is this, do you think, it looks like 1995 all over again, where the sort of consensus when the smoke all cleared was that Democrats had really won in that standoff and shutdown, or is there a new dynamic this time, Gail?
I think there certainly is for the president. This is occurring, you know, as he, the same week he's announcing a re-election campaign.
Yep.
And I think there is a lot of pressure on him, not just from Republicans, but from Democrats as well, to get into this spending, the debt deficit issue. His own debt commission said that his budget not only didn't go far enough, it went nowhere. And I think by 2012, if Republicans keep hammering on this sense that, you know, we are heading toward a cliff, it is the most predictable crisis ever, and a president that doesn't respond to it, you know, before it becomes a disaster, is not a leader. And I think so. There's a longer term issue for the president in this as well, beyond just winning this fight.
Major Garrett, I want to put that to you as well, but if I may, right now we have Republican Congressman Michael Burgess joining us from Washington. Represents the 26th district in Texas. That covers the northern part of the Dallas-Fort Worth sort of a metroplex there. Denton County. He's on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, Vice Chairman of the Subcommittee on Health. Republican Congressman Michael Burgess, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hey, Tom, it's so good to be back with you.
What do you see coming in this intense handful of days here? Are we headed for a shutdown? Do you see a deal in the making? What do you see coming, Congressman?
Oh, it all looks dark, doesn't it? You know, you're talking just a simple backbencher here. I'm not privy to any of the high-level stakes poker match that's going on between the Speaker and the White House and the Senate. My sense is, and what I have done individually, is to begin to prepare that that an agreement will not be reached, and that I'll need to govern myself accordingly, just as how I run my district office and how I run my office in the District of Columbia. I will need to keep some people around to answer telephone calls that will invariably come in as people are concerned about passports, Social Security benefits, VA benefits,
mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it appears that an immediate agreement is not in the offering, and it would not be prudent for me not to prepare.
So you're getting ready for a shutdown. Do you think it was a mistake for Speaker Boehner, apparently, to walk away from the offer of a $33 billion cut in this year's budget? That would have been the biggest in history. That was a pretty big compromise in itself, you'd have to say, by President Obama. Was it a mistake, apparently, for John Boehner to say no thanks to that yesterday?
I don't think so. I think the president and the Democratic leadership in the Senate have not bargained in good faith. For crying out loud, where was the president a month ago? The House passed a continuing resolution, H.R. 1, that certainly was at least worthy of someone in the Senate looking at, and not just folding their arms and leaning back in their chair and saying, we got other things to do today, and then letting it reach this crisis point. That was absolutely wrong. And the president could have weighed in and asked the Senate to at least acknowledge the House's work product. Remember, we stayed up all night,
yeah,
through a week to work on this thing and get it to the Senate in plenty of time for them to take action on it before they went on their vacation and we came up against the deadline. So there was plenty of time to do that.
So how much is enough for you, Congressman? If the riders were taken off the table and the White House offered $40 billion in cuts, would that be enough for you to sign on to saying, yes, we'll take it, there's a deal?
With the riders off the table?
Yeah.
No. It's, you know, come on. Those were Those were things that were worked on in a bipartisan fashion in the House of Representatives. We debated them all day and all night, week in and week out. Those were not just some idle things that were plucked off of the idea vine at some point. Those are meaningful policy changes that, in fact, reflect the wishes of voters all across the country who went to the polls on November 2nd, 2010.
Well,
absolutely not.
Well, I mean, you say meaningful, though, a lot of them, I mean, including, you know, NPR. You're talking with NPR right now. It's not very much money. It's not as much about money as it is about, what, politics, right?
Well, again, you know, you said riders in the aggregate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And while there may be... there may still be room for negotiation about which riders are more equal than others, and I would certainly welcome having that conversation. But at this point, no one has, you know, again, had the Senate said, okay, look, some of these things you guys are just not going to get, but what we will talk about is X, Y, and Z, and see what happens. But nobody even made that offer. It was like a humph. We're not interested.
Do you think it's a winner or a loser for you in your district in Texas if there is a shutdown? Is it going to hurt you down the line and fellow Republicans or not?
Well, just, you know, really, it's not material whether it hurts me politically or not. I didn't run for Congress to win elections. I ran to do the right thing when asked. And at this point, the absolute fiscal meltdown that is right around the corner, what was referred to the other day as the most predictable crisis in history, it would be a mistake to walk away from an opportunity to fix that.
Michael Burgess, Republican congressman from the 26th District in Texas. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yes, Tom. It's always great to be with you.
Major Garrett, most predictable crisis in history. Those are Paul Ryan's words out of Wisconsin. Of course, he's putting the big long-term Republican plan on the table, 2012 and beyond. Michael Burgess there doesn't appear to be too worried about a shutdown. He's planning for it. Sounds like he's ready for it. Do you think it's a loser, a winner for the Republicans? How's it play out?
Well, I think it's going to be a loser for everyone. Mm. I don't think that there is a way to emerge from this particular impasse unscathed, either as a matter of policy or a matter of politics. Everyone is involved in this conversation. The country knows there's a hot war going on in Afghanistan, a winding down war in Iraq, and a kinetic military activity in Libya. It knows that we have gone through an enormous recessionary period. State governments are cutting, county governments are cutting, city governments are cutting. Everyone is feeling the reality of fiscal constraints. And what people registered in the midterm election was the direction of the Obama administration should be checked, halted. The American people did not, if you look at the exit polling data, come up with a profound new direction. They just wanted things to be stopped. But what they wanted that stoppage to do is create a conversation where things get dealt with a bit more rationally. And a government shutdown, it doesn't seem to me, not only from an academic standpoint, but from a political and sort of a government standpoint, doesn't convey getting things done. The White House knows that they can suffer. Senate Democrats know they could suffer. And Republicans know they could suffer. If either side really, truly believed they could prevail, they would have internal polling data to suggest that. And I guarantee you, neither side does. They've been asking this question internally for the last 4 weeks, and nothing moves the needle, meaning public opinion doesn't seem to be moving in anyone's direction, even though we've had a fair amount of posturing and preparation for this. So all sides know this is a potential loser. And if there is a shutdown, I would project to you and predict it would be of short duration, 3, 4, maybe 5 days at the outside, and that this will get resolved one way or the other. I think Congressman Burgess said, well, you know, we could have that conversation about riders, which one are vital, which one are more equal than others. I'm telling you, that's what's going on. That kind of conversation is going. He's not privy to it, but he will be eventually, and that's the kind of thing that's being decided right now.
Sioux City, Iowa. Randy is calling. Randy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that the congressman from Ohio that you had on was just very refreshing for me to hear. Nobody I know wants to cut benefits for the veterans. Nobody I know wants to cut benefits for people that need a hand up. We want to help our fellow Americans. And what I feel that Congress, Senate, they don't listen to is we are tired of them listening to the lobby of the big corporations. Make the corporations pay their fair share. Make the richest Americans pay their fair share. I pay my fair share. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to pay more than I pay, but the same percentage I pay would help us in this quandary we have right now. It would help us recover. It would bring more money in. Yes, cuts need to be made, but more money needs to be generated, and it needs to be fair for everyone. And we're only as strong as our weakest members, and we're losing that. We're losing our compassion. All we're worried about is, all they're worried about is being reelected and where the money comes from to support their campaigns. And we're all tired of that, and nobody talks about it.
Randy, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for being there with that from Sioux City, Iowa. Let me get one more as our clock goes here. Clarendon, Vermont. James, you're on the air. Thank you, Randy. James, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think it'd be pretty good if the government got shut down. They wouldn't be able to spend any more of our taxpayers' money. They want to fund wars, war after war. It's okay, but they don't want to do anything about getting our budget under control.
So let it happen. What about all the people that get hurt in that, James?
We can only hold our representatives that we elected in the original process that are holding America hostage to begin with.
James, I appreciate your call. Gail Chadwick, help us dive into, if we cut $33 billion, let's say, maybe $40 billion, what's in there? What's getting cut, Gail?
Well, that's the open question. I mean, we know what the what Republicans have wanted to cut from the votes that they've taken. But I'm not sure what this inside the box is going to look like when these cuts come out. It is actually possible to cut $30 billion and not notice it. I mean, there is, for example, a significant amount of money sitting in that used it for an earlier cut for the 2010 census. Well, you know, that's over. There's a lot of money like that that's fungible in government. But I think that to me, what's striking as we head into the end game here is that we have yet to hear from the Senate. There is waiting to see if there is a bipartisan deal that comes out of this gang of six. And there's also, in a tremendous switch of fortunes, if you will, the Senate used to be the place that debated things.
Mm-hmm.
The House was the place where the leaders with an iron fist, said what was to be done in limited debate. Boehner has come in with the exact opposite approach. He's turned the House into the Senate, and the Senate has turned into the House. They have not had votes like the House has on this set of issues. There are 15 or 16 Democratic moderates, many of whom are facing very tough re-election bids, who could be potential allies with Republicans in budget cutting, but we don't know because there haven't been the votes in the Senate that there have been in the House. You can do that for a short time, but in the long run, I think it really weakens the Senate. It really weakens Senate Democratic leaders. They're vulnerable to the kind of criticism that the House freshmen are making. You guys haven't stepped up to the plate. You're not behaving like a democracy. It's wrong.
Major Garrett, is it really a mystery box? What's in that 30 or 40 or who knows what now $1 billion in cuts if and when it goes through? I mean, I look back to January here at the Republican side, and there's, Department of Energy research, $1.2
sure.
billion in savings,
I mean,
cuts right on down.
Gail is right. It's a mystery what the deal will be, what will be actually agreed to, 33 or 40, whatever the number is. But we do have a bit of a roadmap, and it's an extensive one. If you want to go on the House Appropriations website, you can find exactly what Republicans cut in the original $61 billion package. And Health and Human Services and Education is a huge part of the discretionary budget. It's the one Democrats philosophically care about the most. And let me just run off a couple of quick numbers
yeah.
here. $1.3 billion in cuts to grants for employment services to states. This is money that states use to improve worker retraining.
Okay.
So $1.3 billion gone from there. $525 million cut from employment services for older Americans. That's transition funding.
Yeah.
$1 billion from community health services. If you want to talk about NIH, National Institutes of Health, $300 million in cuts to global AIDS initiatives, $639 billion in just their overall operating budget. So these are the kind of cuts. They're all there line by line. That's how you get to $61 billion. You cut things piece by piece by piece. And what Democrats argue is that most of these cuts Republicans outline deal with these core government services. And Republicans actually agree with that because they say in the stimulus – these programs all got a huge boost, and in the first appropriation cycle under President Obama, they all got a huge boost. So they're bringing them back to levels that they think are more consistent with what the country actually needs, not the priorities that the Obama administration and House and Senate Democrats first established in that first year of the Obama presidency. That's the sort of central tension in this debate about discretionary spending.
Wow. Well, it is going to be something to see play out. You two have been really great in helping us peer into the fog of budget battle here, and we will stay on top of it. We'll talk tomorrow about Medicare and Medicaid proposals now on the table, what that would mean for people, for the country. Major Garrett with the National Journal, it's terrific to have you, Major. Thank you for taking
the
time today. Thanks for joining us. And Gail Chadwick, always wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for your insights today, Gail.
Thank you, Tom.
Gail Chadwick with the Christian Science Monitor. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And when you go to Facebook, hit that like button. You'll get the early word on upcoming shows. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.